Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Hello and welcome to episode 59 of Field Pass Hockey's AHL podcast, The Holy Grail. This week is for the episode for March 23rd, and we're here to give you a recap of the latest news from around the American Hockey League. Just to kind of get ourselves a little acclimated to our faces, if you're new here or it's your first time back here in a while, we're going to go around the screen and introduce ourselves, but we'll do it with a little bit of a question. And excluding your beat, I want to ask you guys, what is the best third jersey in the American Hockey League?
Yeah, Andrew Rinaldi over here on the Chicago Wolves and Grand Rapids Griffins beat. And I got to say, I've loved the Milwaukee Admirals third since it debuted, and I'm still going to love it. It's got the perfect kind of cream color to me, and I love the red and the blue. The logo is classic. How can you not fall in love with that kind of, they call it the faux back, you know? It's kind of a throwback, but it's not really entirely a throwback. It's like a reimagining of what an old jersey would look like for them. So It screams retro hockey to me, and that automatically gets some love on my end.
And I'm Corey Swartz. I had a hard time picking with this one a little bit, as I had a couple of different options here. But I am a really big fan of the Springfield Thunderbirds third jersey they introduced this year. So the Springfield Thunderbirds have this third jersey they've done. It's a completely big departure from, you know, their usual. Their primary colors are more red and white. And this one is blue and gold, and I think it's just fantastic. Like, I love the look of it. It's very much St. Louis Blues-inspired color schemes. They wore it for a couple of games against Hershey earlier this season, so I got to see them in person back in January. And they're fantastic. I love them. It's a great, has, you know, the great Springfield, you know, word mark on it, so to speak. And, you know, obviously we're showing a picture of it right now. I love it. Give me more like it. Two great jerseys. I usually can't vote against Bears jerseys, but I was very close that game for sure.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer, managing editor and your North Division expert / Cleveland Monsters correspondent. But first, I have to say, Andrew, I remember that jersey being such a hot point of contention, and we just, like, none of us could really settle on it. So it's kind of funny that we're bringing it back as, you know, a nod for one of the best specialty jerseys. But so literally as I was sitting down to prepare for this show, my husband Gary showed me a picture of this jersey that's going to be coming out this Saturday, the This Is The Way jersey for the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. And instead of the Penguins on the jersey, it's Grogu, it's Baby Yoda. And I have been obsessed with The Mandalorian lately, so this was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, and I'm Zach Power, covering the Toronto Marlies here for Field Pass Hockey. For me, this is kind of a little bit of a strange one that kind of came and went pretty quickly. And that was the Grateful Dead jerseys by the Grand Rapids Griffins. I'm a little bit of an insider Deadhead, and I hope you can see it there. But it's the black, if you're on Spotify, it's completely black. It's got the Grateful Dead logo there in the center with the Grand Rapids Griffins coloring. I absolutely love it. It's unfortunately one that I wasn't able to get my hands on, a physical jersey, but I'm hoping to get it in the future. Speaking of the future, we got lots of good things to look ahead to in this episode, including a look at the playoff primer, and we'll get that going right now as we take a look at our weekly news recap. And the Toronto Marlies have become the latest team to clinch their ticket into the Calder Cup playoffs. They're the first team to claim their spot. And the eastern side of things, no teams have yet to be eliminated from playoff contention.
Yeah, and Zach, going right along with that, we have a team that's on the verge of clinching a playoff spot with the Providence Bruins. Their magic number is just one heading into the in this week's set of action here. They play a couple of games down in Charlotte Saturday and Sunday. And remember, that's any combination of points gained by the team that drops that number or any points lost by a team, the top team outside of the bubble that is chasing them. So I believe in that case, it's the Bridgeport Islanders right now. But yeah, you got a couple other teams really getting close. Hershey's probably the next closest, if I remember right, at four. So you might have a couple of clinchers this weekend, which would be great to see.
And Zach, I need some help, my friend. I need you to cue up the milestone alert. Awesome. After a two-assist outing on Sunday afternoon, Cleveland Monsters forward Trey Fix-Wolanski, good friend of the pod, has moved into sole possession of second place in Cleveland Monsters history for points with 134. He was tied with, if you see him on that, he set up that beautiful goal. That was his second assist of the night. It was either Alex or Terry Broadhurst. It was one of the two Broadhurst brothers he was tied with for that second one. But of course, with the 2-point night, bumps him up to having that outright. Now, assuming he doesn't go on an absolute meteoric tear for the rest of the season, and assuming he's back with Cleveland next season, he is a pending free agent here. He will be set to eclipse Andrew Agostino's first place record in franchise history of 165 points sometime next season. So Trey is also on pace to set multiple team single season records, including goals, which was set by Zach Dalpe, 33 goals in 2018-19, and TJ Hensick has a record in 2009 and 10 for both assists and points, 50 and 70 respectively. Ben Walter also hit that 70-point mark a year later in 2010-11. And there's also a possibility that he's going to upset Agostino's career points record for goals, 67, and assists, 98 as well, all depending on how the rest of the regular season goes. So huge milestone alerts on the way and already here for the young forward.
More big milestones coming out of the West this week as well. Over the weekend, Abbotsford Justin Dowling skated his 500th career AHL game. The Canucks put out a special touch on the moment by showing his wife and his daughter, acknowledging that moment. So congratulations to him.
In America's heartland, we have a bright and shining star coming through with his first career AHL hat trick. Iowa's Marco Rossi put up three against, you know, the San Diego Gulls, because who hasn't, on Saturday in a 6-2 win for the Iowa Wild, and I'm sure it's the first of many for the young center.
And throwing it back over here to the East, we have another milestone here as Hershey Bears forward Sam Annis scored his 300th professional point. It was a big return, so it was the same building. So Sam Annis hadn't skated in a game in almost 3 months, I believe would have been. He was injured at PPL Center on December 21st of 2022, so last game before the Christmas break. And his return is Hershey's final game in Lehigh Valley for the season. He comes back, he scores a goal that's his 300th point, and also turned out to be the game-winning goal as Hershey takes a 2-1 decision in Lehigh Valley on Friday. And his return to the lineup was also huge in that it helped to put a full complement of forwards on the ice for Hershey as they were dealing with a lot of injuries here over the weekend.
I mean, he's just making his return known in such a big way. And honestly, do we expect anything else out of him at this point, seeing what he did all of last season?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was especially, you know, particular for him to get on the power play. He'd been such a fixture on that unit for the Bears prior to his injury, you know, and having core muscle surgery. We weren't even sure if he was going to be able to play again this season, just based on the injury at first. So, you know, just a really great thing to see, you know, alongside so many of the depth contributions the Bears got over the weekend. But Sam hitting the milestone and scoring in his return was definitely the highlight for sure.
And then one more for the week, we go to Grand Rapids, where Dominic Schein tallied his 100th career AHL point, scoring actually an overtime winner against the Cleveland Monsters there. Now, Schein was kind of the target of probably my favorite quote in the business from head coach Ben Simon, who said he would crawl into a foxhole any day of the week for him. Shiner is always, he's providing the intangibles for the team. Doesn't show up so often on the score sheet. He does a lot of the little things. So seeing this on his end, it's really great to see it for Shiner.
And someone who's been shining bright, let's turn our attention to the Elite Prospect of the Week. Now, many thanks to our partner Elite Prospects, the world's leading hockey resource for league, team, and player news, and as well as stats there. Each week we'll be naming the AHL Elite Prospect of the Week here on the Holy Grail, of course. And whether it's some on-ice play or some type of achievement or something that just made them stand out, that player will be recognized each week, and Corey will tell us a little bit about this week's Elite Prospect.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking about a goaltender from the Springfield Thunderbirds. And now if that seems familiar, it's because we just talked about Joel Hofer last week, I believe it was. But today we're talking about their other goaltenders. Vadim Zhurenko gets the honors this week, as a key part of the Thunderbirds lineup here in the month of March. He just turned 22 years old and kind of took the, center stage for the Thunderbirds here after Joel Hofer was recalled and, is, as of this recording, planned to start another game for the St. Louis Blues, as they've elected to keep him on likely for the rest of the regular season. But Zhurenko kind of took over the show here. He's just 22 years old. It's his first season. He's a rookie. But he had an incredible performance this past Sunday against the Providence Bruins. He stopped 53 of 55 shots to get his team to a shootout where they unfortunately lost. Again, that game was insane. He made 11 saves in the overtime period alone, if you can believe that stat, too, including a couple of really hectic sequences, some really quality ones. I felt like my groin was sore just watching him and some of those clips there, too. It was pretty insane. But if those stats weren't convincing enough, he's won 6 of his last 8 starts, with both of his losses only coming in extra time. You'd have to go back to January 14th. To find the last time that he lost in regulation. And he's posted a .925 save percentage and a 2.71 goals against average, with that save percentage being good enough for third in the American Hockey League. And I'd have to go back and fact check this one a little bit, but I would be curious to see that January 14th game wasn't one that I was at against the Bears, actually. So I'll have to go and fact check that one real quick for y'all on that one, because I think that's about that weekend when that happens. So he's been very impressive. You look at Hofer, who kind of took over the reins after they lost Charlie Lindgren, made them really forget about losing him in a lot of ways. And, and in fact, I just checked it. That was the last time that they lost in regulation, was to Hershey on the 14th. So I happened to be there for that game. So that's a crazy stat, crazy coincidence there too, for sure. But he's been fantastic. He more than deserves it. Of course, all that data is courtesy of Elite Prospects.
For sure. He's been getting all sorts of love from his team, I'm sure. And speaking of love, we're going to move right back into the segment that I love the most, and that's the swipe left or swipe right segment. And I think there's no love from Andrew this week, who's going to get us kicked off here.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep it light here. It's that time of the year where things are starting to get a little warmer and our bodies are struggling to adjust. I don't know if you guys can hear me. I'm really battling a cold-like symptoms here, and cold suck. That's my hot take of the week. Cold suck.
I'm not about to use my super swipe on a non-hockey take, but yeah, right swipe. Yeah. I just hope you get feeling better soon, friend.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it a right swipe there too, of course. Sicknesses suck. It's that time of year where it's, the transitionary between winter and spring is really upon us, at least over here in the east side of things. So I hope you feel better, Andrew. That's now fun to go through. And I sympathize for you.
Yeah, I'll right swipe on that. That's all I got to say about that. I'll right swipe. No objections from me.
Yeah, I appreciate the pity swipes. I wish I could get some of those on my apps.
Well, I have a hot take for you that, is hopefully as spicy as, you know, to some people is, you know, taking a picture with a fish and putting it on your profile as the top picture. But I spent a lot of time at PPL Center last week. I was down there for both of Hershey's games against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. I know last week I said I was going Friday. Surprise, I went on Wednesday, the day after we recorded as well. But on Wednesday's game, I bought tickets as I was kind of getting to the arena as we were going in, that sort of thing. And I want to bring up this picture that I took from my seat. That was my seat. So on Lehigh Valley's ticket purchasing page, they have a map, and it's similar to those of you who have to, you know, use, and by use I mean suffer with Ticketmaster for seats. That railing looked like a steps to go down, and that's me sitting in this seat here. And for those of you who are listening, it is, you can see one zone from the blue line in, and that's it. There is a wall on the other side of you. And the PPL Center, I did my research on it just to make sure I remembered this, of course, correctly. The PPL Center opened in 2014. There's a lot of stuff that I love about the PPL Center, including the fact that on, you know, three quarters, I'd say, of the arena, when you're walking around on the the concourse, you can actually look in and see down to the ice. If you're walking to your seat and the play started, you could theoretically track it while you're walking, type of thing. It's really great. But I'm sitting here and I'm like, my hot take has to be there should never, ever, ever be an obstructed seat. And this isn't just a hockey issue. This is any event issue. This is a lower level seat. And if you purchase the seat on a playoff game when it's sold out, you're not seeing a darn thing that's not happening outside of your zone that you're having to be looking at. So my hot take is, and you know, Milton Hershey got this right way back in the Great Depression, there should never be a seat that's obstructing your view of the play. That is my hot take.
Yeah, I don't know how it's legal to sell that seat. You can't, or it should at least be half price because you only see half the game.
Yeah, right swipe. And for my knowledge, whenever I finally get there, what section should I avoid so I don't get that same seat?
Well, that section was, I believe, 119, if I'm not mistaken. You just have to keep an eye out because to the left of this seat, there is a like an exclusive like club lounge type of thing. We actually saw former Lehigh Valley Phantoms forward Greg Carey sitting in these what I can only describe as like deluxe desk chairs in this club lounge area. I was about ready to ask him if he was going to go get his skates and his stick out and go score a couple on Hershey like he always did. thank goodness he probably could. He you know wouldn't be able to do that as he always seemed to back in the day. But you know, you really just have to avoid that kind of, you know, angle. I mean, they have some seats that go way back, and you know, depending on what day you go to, obviously you can see in front of me, it was a Wednesday, so it was not hard to maneuver myself around to be able to see. As a Sam Wismer, who, you know, I hope she's listening to attest that I did appear in the background of one of her pictures that she took from along the ice, and I said that was me adjusting my view to be able to see this. But yeah, so you just have to be very vigilant of those sorts of things. I would just say, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Maybe just stay on one of the ends, you know, north or south behind the net just to be safe. All the other seats are pretty good, but that was just a dud.
It's amazing to me that they would even sell this. And I'm going to try to pull up a picture for you, for those of you on YouTube, of the clip, the picture of the Islanders, who kind of have a similar sort of issue that they used to have at the Barclays Center. And you know, I would think that there would be enough people that could complain out there to kind of say, you know what, maybe we shouldn't sell these sort of seats, right? Like, you really think that they would say, no, we just won't sell section 114 row F, right? Like, I don't know what else to say, but like, that is absolutely... Least.
So I'm going to bring up concerts because I have seen a lot of concerts where they say, like, whenever you click on that seat, obstructed view, and usually the ticket isn't as expensive. And, you know, that way you would kind of gamble on it. Like, well, I'm okay with having an obstructed view, or in this case, mostly obstructed view. I can't left swipe, or I can't right swipe fully on, no, this seat should not be sold 100%, but there has to be at least a disclaimer. I mean, we're in the year 2023. In my opinion, you should be able to click on a seat on whatever ticket buying app you're on, and you should be able to see what the view is going to look like from that seat.
Well, Corey, I got to ask you this. How many times does Lehigh Valley shoot there? Because that really depends, because maybe they're just trying to hide something.
That would be the net that they shoot at twice.
That explains
it. Yes. So the silly thing about the way, you know, I'm splitting hairs here. I really liked PPL Center. This is just some of the oddities of the rink that I felt were very unusual and worth sharing, is that when the teams come out for warmups too, there's actually one tunnel going down one bench. So to the right here of this picture is where the Phantoms actually come out from behind the net to come on the ice between, you know, on and off for each intermission. The Bears actually came out at the other end of the ice there on the corner. But the problem is that they had to overlap each other to go on to their respective sides. So I was thinking to myself, like, if you really wanted to fight somebody and you didn't care how, like, you got so much opportunity to do so. I'm surprised there's never been a Donnybrook type of situation there. But that's kudos to the players for being professional, I suppose, all this time at least. But yeah, it drives me nuts. And Dina, I double-checked it. I found my ticket on my phone. It's section 113, row 20, seat 11 and 12 that I had there. So if you need to avoid something here, timestamp this one and come back to it if you ever go down there. Just go the row in front of it, go a couple seats to the right of it. You're totally fine, but that one you'd have to stand if you were, you know, in that seat.
It just sounds like the original architects of the PPL Center decided to do some massive social experimentation.
It feels like they just didn't design it with the hockey in mind, but, like, you know, maybe they had like an inverted rink plan or something. Like, there had to have been a couple of things that were just off during construction that they just have to live with now, perhaps.
And that's the thing, is I thought that arena was built for AHL hockey specifically. I can't entirely remember my research on AHL arenas, but, like, that's something I think I remember seeing, is that they built that for Phantoms hockey. So
that it was highly, highly touted for it, for sure, because they touted that whole you can see the ice from anywhere on the concourse. No, it's not 100% true. That club section, there is an area that you go to. It's almost like, you know, a soundproof booth or something like that on the concourse, where you got a lot of wall separating you from the rink. It gets deadly quiet in there compared to how the actual rink is. I don't even know if you could hear their Mack truck horn from there.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead with my swipe and, or I guess my take, my profile here. So I'm going to talk about a different kind of profile today, and that is AHL TikTok. And now I know I spend way too much time on TikTok in general, but specifically hockey talk. But guys, if you aren't on it, you need to go check it out strictly for the AHL content. Teams like Springfield, Grand Rapids, Iowa, Chicago, and Cleveland are turning out some pure gold content. Now, a lot of it's like behind the scenes stuff to showcase the players as people, the coaches, the training staff, the social admins. I mean, you get to really see a lot of personalities. And there's some clips that I really, really wish that I could show here, but because of copyrighted music and all that kind of stuff, I can't. But so basically, my take is that the NHL has long been criticized for not promoting their players, not really highlighting the players as people, their personalities, to like really sell the sport and get people behind the individual players. So my take is that with these TikTok accounts and the fact that they're so laid back and fun, is that with the limited staff and budgets that the AHL has, they are doing player promotion right.
I don't know how the AHL does so much better at promoting and like everything on socials to the All-Star game so much better than the parent league. I don't understand. I'm not a huge TikTok guy, but I will right swipe it just for the exposure that it does give for the teams and for the league.
You had me initially saying I was going to swipe left because I'm an old man waving my cane at the sky saying if it were Vine, I would have said yes. because I'm an old fogey and I refuse to embrace TikTok because I've only happened to see the annoying side of TikTok during my time here. But if anything to get younger folks on board with it, so that's kind of turning me into a right swipe there, because, you know, if there's anything that I see that I always wonder is, like, you know, how are we going to keep young folks interested in not only just hockey, but in minor league hockey as well, right? Like, it's always kind of a hard sell for kids that, you know, they want to wear your Kucherov jerseys, your, you know, insert big name NHL player here. But that sort of stuff really can get kids that will, you know, and young folks especially, they use those kind of apps to say, oh, I'll follow my favorite AHL team on TikTok, because that's, you know, it's an easy thing for kids to want to just saturate their feeds with that sort of stuff. It's a great thing. It's a great way to reach young people, and I'm surprised more teams aren't doing it, to be perfectly honest. So you turned me from a disbeliever to a believer with your take there. So well done. Well done. I'm on board with it.
Thank you.
I will say this. Don't do TikTok unless it's on the wall. But I will say this, I will take your word for it. And I will say that the AHL is doing pretty good in especially what they're doing. And Corey really sold me in saying that this is very much a family friendly league, right? In a league that really kind of opens the sport to the next generation, the younger generation. And I love that about the American Hockey League. And that doesn't go without hard work from those people behind the scenes. So I'll not only take your word on it, but I'll also know what I know outside of TikTok, and I'll swipe right on it.
Yay. Thank you. I mean, I'm just thinking of one clip in particular, and I don't even know if it was the AHL, because one thing about hockey TikTok is once you start following a lot of, say, like AHL or NHL teams, even leagues from Europe will start kind of getting into your For You page. And there's this one clip of, it might have even been like an ECHL team. Like, there's this one viral sound that's going on that's, and we will use the power of friendship. And it's one player that's picks up another, like his line mate's stick, and kind of tosses it over to him. And you just see this long toss, and he just grabs it out of midair. And just as it's floating and the guy catches it, it's, we will use the power of friendship. And it's just, it's a lot of it is just super wholesome, fun stuff like that. And yeah, I spend way too much time on Hockey Talk, so I'm sure I'll see some of y'all that are listening there.
For sure. My take this week goes to the Calder Cup, and I think that it's going to go in the Pacific Division. We talked about the race last week and where that is, and I get that some of the big names are going to be knocked out in the opening round, but I can't think of anybody else. I don't think Toronto's a contender to get past the second round anymore, at least the way they sit. You know, Texas might raise a little hell, but I think that it's going to come out of the Pacific Division.
So I'm actually going to kind of throw this back. I believe it was last week or the week before, and Corey made a good point about him, and I'm probably kind of stealing what he's going to say, and if I am, I'm so sorry, Corey, where he has an issue right swiping on these Pacific Division type things because they basically exclusively play within their own division. They don't go out like the North and the Central. I know those two specifically tend to really go out of their divisions. I have a hard time. It's like, I want to see like this Cinderella story of Coachella Valley just doing the thing in their inaugural season, because I just think it'd be fun with the personalities that they have on that team and that fan base. But at the same time, I can't, I'm just seeing both Providence and Hershey, and I know what they can do. I can't left. I have to left swipe on this one. I'm sorry. I can't count those two out.
That's why it's a hot take.
I'm super swiping this because I've been on the Wranglers bandwagon for pretty much all season, kind of cycling back to the Western Conference Finals of last year, and this team, I believe, has only gotten better since then, adding Cole Schwind. They don't have Radim Zahorna anymore. He's over in Toronto, but I thought he was a big piece of that squad. They're scoring more. They are. Dustin Wolf is even better. And I think the only team that can skate with them is Coachella. And oh, hey, they're also in the Pacific. So I don't think that's really much. I like Milwaukee and Texas, but I think that Calgary is just a deeper squad top to bottom. Maybe someone in the knees that they find in the finals can come trip them up, but they're the favorites to me, and I got to stick with it.
Reading between the lines, are you saying that the Pacific Division final is going to be the true Calder Cup final?
I did say last year that the Western Conference final was the true Calder Cup final, and I know Corey was kind of pumping the Springfield tires there a minute, but that Stockton Chicago series definitely trumped the quality of hockey that I saw in the Calder Cup final. So I don't really want to call it yet, because I think if you get a Milwaukee team that's got Yaroslav Askarov playing hot, that they can make some noise, but if you got Coachella in Calgary, that's going to be
that's happening in round two as of right now. So that could be the series of round two. Whether or not it's the series of round three or whatnot, that remains to be seen. I think that there's going to be a good couple matchups there.
That's a shame, because that would be a 5-game series too, if I'm not mistaken. So if that were the true Calder Cup finals, you'd have to deal with a little bit of bummer, and that would bring me back to the debate about the playoff format, to be honest with you. But that's a discussion for the offseason. Swipe left. Tell me you haven't watched the Atlantic Division without telling me you haven't been watching the Atlantic Division. Y'all just outed yourselves on this one. But the Atlantic has a lot of great competition here for this. And I say as someone who watches basically exclusive, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I don't watch the Pacific Division that much. But all I know is that they play each other so much. Dina kind of, took my talking points there a little bit, with, what I said last week in a lot of ways, is that, they play each other all the time. And sure, they're really good teams. It's not taking away from anything that they've accomplished this season. But, you have some great teams that have been playing, a lot of other great teams. Obviously, in the Atlantic, it's, the top teams don't play each other all the time. They don't play teams that are the dregs either of the league. Sorry, not sorry to San Diego. There's no teams that are really awful. Even look at, the last place team in the Atlantic is Wilkes-Barre. They've given Hershey a run for their money in their season series, which is now over. Both teams won 6 games out of 12. It's much more parity there, I would say. And so that's what, I just don't know that it's and this is the problem with, the AHL, unfortunately, not being in a place where, the NHL, where every team plays each other at least once. Now, obviously, it's not always a fair comparison to make with NHL teams, but you see some matchups in the NHL where, ooh, this could be a Stanley Cup final game. Ooh, this could be an Eastern Conference final game. You get to see that at least exist, unlike the AHL at this point. So I got to throw it to the Atlantic. I think it's a much tougher division than it's getting credit for in this one here. A lot of stingy defensive teams that, have the moxie, I think, to at least make life miserable for a Pacific Division team. So that's my hot take. I'm an Atlantic boy. I really want to see the Bears bring home the Calder Cup this year. So it could just be fighting against gravity, too, in some ways, too. I'd be happy to be proven wrong.
I gave you a little bit of love there.
I will say this as well, and I do think that you made some really good points, especially given the solar system model that the AHL has. I've said it before on this podcast. I think I'll say it again. I think it's a load of horse dung, if you ask me. And I think that it's, you're exactly right. It's hard to kind of compare Hershey and Calgary in a lot of ways because they've seen such different opponents, right? I don't even think that Calgary and Hershey have seen one common mutual opponent. I don't think that they've both seen, say, Milwaukee, or they've both seen somebody like that, you could compare and say, this team bet X team, but this team never bet X team, right? So that's kind of my side of it as well. But you make a really good point that it's hard to compare the two.
And the, The other thing, one more thing real quick here. I'm so sorry. But the one thing that kind of, you know, drives me nuts about this equation, too, is that that's somewhat on those teams in general, too, right? Like, the Bears don't play anybody from the Central Division like a lot of teams do. There's no, like you said, there's no mutual comparison. And with the Atlantic, there's so many, the parity's so strong that you don't have a outstanding team, you know, no outstanding team really presents itself there either. So that's just one thing I wanted to add on is that, you know, you see like a hot team like, you know, Hershey, it's one of the top teams. They had a 3-game losing streak and then a 3-game winning streak. Like, you know, it's just not as easy to just beat up on somebody. And, you know, if Providence and Hershey play each other, I'd be fascinated by that matchup just because of that too. And, you know, it makes for a really interesting, if you get that Atlantic Pacific Calder Cup finals, would be fantastic, which, you know, is certainly something to watch out for too, for sure.
I think you made a good point there too. And I think that it's only, if you're looking for that Calgary Hershey matchup, I think it, like that comparison is going to be there sometime soon. There's no way Calgary doesn't play a couple more games, at least on the north side of border of Canada. And I think that Hershey comes up there all the time to Canada. So it'll be an interesting one there to see that same comparison. Sometimes I feel like we're going round in circles with this debate. So we'll move on to our next rounded segment, the Wheel of Fate. And we're going to update you on the standings a little bit. They did give me the keys to the car for this podcast. And I unfortunately can't tell you that I'll be able to spin the wheel for you guys again, but thoughts so far around the table?
I'm mad I listened to you guys on my goaltender because he's been up with the Avalanche and not getting me any points. I was told that he would not be that, that he would not be the one that would get brought up.
That wasn't me, okay?
No.
You look at everybody else who's below me and at the very bottom. I say below me like Corey, like it's right on the screen. And so is Andrew. I don't know what to tell you there. That wasn't me.
I guessed and I guessed wrong.
Hey, I stood pat, and I feel accomplished because, you know, I had to watch him beat up on the Bears the other week here, but Vinny Lettieri comes back and just immediately collects 5 points for me. Samuel Arison's back and collecting some points for me. No surprise I'm moving up. I just want to keep moving up further here, hopefully.
Corey, you've had a lot of players, they were out for a while, but, I mean, you were at the top of the standings for such a long time. I mean, like, I would have to think that you're coming back towards the top. You don't got a lot of track left, though.
Well, y'all just re-rolled here and just struck absolute gold with some of these picks. All of a sudden, I went from first to, like, dead last by a large margin. I was like, well, I'm going to have to figure something out here. I was really sitting on it for the last couple of weeks, just, like, fingers crossed that one of these guys would come back. You know, mainly those two. And, you know, obviously Marty Ferk has just been a workhorse for me this year, as well as Connor Carrick. Not to be outshined by that in that Providence performance. He had like 4 or 5 assists or something against the Bears, too. So it was one of those things where I was like, my fantasy team is loving it. My real team, my beat team is hating it, honestly. So ups and downs for sure. That's how the season goes.
I just want to know, does anybody know the status of the Avalanche's goaltenders? Like, is my guy going to be up there for a while that I need to roll on a goaltender? Or
I don't know. I feel like you got Georgiev is the starter, and then Francouz is the backup, right? I feel like Frankie's just consummately hurt. Like, he's just one of those goalies that he's good in that when he's there, but he's never there. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of an issue. So I thought that Keith Kincaid, they acquired him so that he could fill that role, but I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, you would think. Unless they're thinking that, you know, Jonas Johansson's going to be out for a while, and Keith Kincaid is the second goaltender for the Eagles. Great. That fills me with a lot of confidence. I might be re-rolling next week. I might give it a week and do a little bit of research, see what's happening. But
I mean, Dina and goaltenders. Was a pretty solid NHL goaltender for a while, right? Like, he's had his time in the sun, so.
Wait, are you saying I just switch? Like,
well, no, I don't think that's in the rules, but like,
I didn't think so.
No, but I was just talking about Kincaid. I like Kincaid.
I hear he has a strong emoji game.
Does he?
I don't know if he still does, but back when he played for the. When he was in the NHL, like full time, and I know back when he was that short time he was with the Jackets, like he would always do like a game recap, but everything would be an emoji. So like every two or three words was an emoji, and you had to kind of, it was almost like a Pictionary. You had to kind of decipher what he was trying to say. It was something I looked forward to all the time.
So a bit of a tangent here, but I do remember Kincaid using some emojis in a post that Stefan Nason shared during last year's Calder Cup playoffs, where Keith Kincaid texted him like good luck tonight and threw some emojis in there. Stefan Nason responded, "I'm feeling three tonight." Stefan Nason scored a hat trick against the Milwaukee Admirals that evening. He called his shot, and I haven't seen anything like that since then, but we haven't gotten to the playoffs yet. But that was I missed that Wolves team.
Sounds like some Mark Messier stuff right there, and the Wolves kind of exited just like the Rangers did, so that's what it sounds like to me. For those of you who are on Spotify and as well wherever you get your podcasts, we'll go up and down through the list. My team is in first place with 1,245 points. Second place is Andrew with just under 1,200 at 1,197. Corey's in third place, but rounding a comeback in my opinion, with 1,189. And Dina, who's going to re-roll on a goaltender surely next week. If not, I'll give her a re-roll with 1,130. So she's just about 100 points or so out of first place. It's a pretty tight one. It's been an interesting season so far. Lots to share, and we'll keep thinking about what we're going to do for next week. Let's keep the show rocking and rolling, and we will move on now to our segment, Who's Hot and Who's Not, to get us started off in the Atlantic Division. It will be Corey.
Yeah, so I had the fun of being able to watch this unfold over the last week here. But Connor McMichael's coming into his own here for the Bears. He's been a huge contributor. He's got five straight games with a point, seven in his last eight. While those eyes are not eye-popping by any stretch of the imagination, this goal right here is him stealing and scoring in Hershey's 2-1 win on Saturday. Great celebrations, by the way. He does a little fist pump here. And my favorite little thing that the Bears do here that you're going to watch when he comes to the bench here is that he does, I believe they're calling it the little bear roar here. Okay, maybe you don't get to see it in this clip. Maybe it was the last one. But they kind of put their hands up and do a little bear roar on their way to the bench. As you can see here, 2-on-0. He's just scored a number of clutch goals. And how fitting that it is here on a day where it's 2 years ago to the day that he scored a clutch buzzer beater in overtime for the Bears in his rookie season here. I was reminded of that today, and it's one of my favorite games I was ever in a building to experience for during the COVID year. But he's just such a prospect where he's had such a tumultuous development, right? Like, he had that first year in Hershey that was a rousing success. He went up and was just in and out, no consistent playing time in Washington. Now he's back here, and they seem committed to leaving him down here. But, you know, at least for this season, who knows what the future has in store for him. But fun fact, he even had the captain's A on his jersey on Friday with a lot of the Bears leadership group out of the lineup. So he's really starting to get to that point, whether he'll be in Hershey. If he's in Hershey next year, I wouldn't be surprised to see that return. But as for not, sometimes you go from hot to being not. And that kind of happened with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms this past week. They won a bunch of clutch games in a row. We're coming in, I believe, on a 5-game winning streak, if I'm not mistaken, and just kind of fell flat. They surrendered a lead, you know, lost 6-3. A lot of depth players for Hershey scored in that game. Somehow managed to drown out Garrett Wilson's second hat trick of the season, which, you know, on this podcast, we love hat tricks. So I had to mention that one, that they still had a hat trick and lost, which feels very rare anymore. But, you know, they not only lost the rematch with Hershey on Friday, but they also lost to Wilkes-Barre on Sunday. So it's three straight losses, all of them on home ice. Big point swing. You know, they were looking to jump up as high as to contend with Charlotte for third place and go beyond that. And now they kind of seem to have, you know, come back to earth in a lot of ways from that hot streak. And that's always, you know, kind of how it goes with these hot streaks. As soon as you talk about them, that's when they get snapped. And that team that you saw that's been succeeding kind of, you know, turns invisible for at least a week. So unfortunately, that's the way that it went. And, you know, you never know. There's still 10 games left this season trying to mount a comeback.
So, guys, for the North Division, hot and not, this is going to be the most chaotic, what is she doing, who's hot, who's not, I'm ever going to get you. So just strap in here. So my hot is now out week to week. Sorry about that. And my not is a playoff clinch team. But trust me, this will make sense, I hope. But anyway, for my hot, a third-year forward from the Rochester Americans, Brandon Biro, is in a career season and is trying his best, well, was trying his best, to drag his team into the playoffs. Now, this clip, if you're on YouTube, is going to look a lot like the one that we just showed on Corey's take, but this one is a little breakaway. Ooh, nice snipe there, shorthanded, and this goal ended up being the game winner in a 2-0 win over the Laval Rocket. But yeah, Brandon Biro totaled 11 points, 2 goals, 9 assists over a recent 5-game point streak, which actually began with a career high 5-point effort back on March the 10th against the Hartford Wolfpack. And then he factored in on both goals last Wednesday against Laval. So he reached the 50-point mark for the first time in his pro career and currently leads with 50 points and 48 games. Now, his 19 points, 6 goals, and 13 assists over his past 11 games also includes, like we said, we love hat tricks here, includes his first career hat trick in a 7-5 loss at Laval. Corey, this is like, I feel like I'm copying you. There's so many parallels here. Anyway, in the 7-5 loss at Laval to open the month of March. And he also recorded at least one shot in all but 8 games so far this season. Now, he's been with the Amerks for 111 career games, totaling 96 points on 29 goals and 67 assists. And he never went more than 7 games without a point over the last 3 years. And, you know, looking back on this now, it's like I had written all this up and then I saw the news that, oh, he's out week to week with, I believe, a lower body injury. So I guess, you know, my runner up here or my active hot would be Roby Gervinti for the Belleville Senators for his 4-game point streak. And I guess that would have been just as good. But for my not, we're going to go Toronto, and I know y'all are saying, Dina, they're playoff clinched. What are you thinking? I mean, okay, fair. But listen, missing 2 starting goaltenders, missing like 6 of their 10 scoring leaders, the defense is gutted, 8 unanswered goals in 5 periods, currently on a 2-game win streak, one of the bottom records in the past 10 in the North Division. They got smacked around by the Charlotte Checkers. That is not with a capital N-O-T. Now, Joseph Wool and Alex Steeves are coming back, I hear. But honestly, is that going to be enough to get them back to their dominant ways with so many teams that are going to be coming after them hot for points?
And moving on to the Central, my hot's going to be a bit of a different name. It's Ty Fellhaber from the Milwaukee Admirals. And if that name kind of sounds unfamiliar, he's only played 9 games here for the Ads coming up at the beginning of March. But here you see him scoring a huge goal against the Griffins and on the power play on top of it. So if you're wondering why you get kind of a random name on the power play, here's a list of big producers for the Admirals. Luke Evangelista, Kiefer Sherwood, Phil Tomasino, Jordan Gross, Igor Fanasyev, and Tommy Novak. They are all up in Nashville. So here comes a guy who's been kind of lighting it up down in the coast in Fort Wayne, and he comes in and has just been an instant spark plug in the Admirals lineup. 4 points in his last 4 games, including 2 goals that have essentially sank what little hope remained in the Griffin season. You know, Milwaukee, with all these holes in their lineup, they really needed producers to kind of step up. And I mean, they absolutely had one and Fellhaber. And you just love to see stories of these guys who come in and make the most of their opportunities. And I know it was tough to watch as a guy in the Griffin's beat, but I mean, it's certainly not been anything new this year. So, you know, game recognized game. Speaking of my beats, let's go to the Knot. A combined 0-3-1 this weekend. You can kind of kiss any aspirations of my playoff coverage goodbye. 9 and 10 points back, about just a couple of little over 10 games left in the season, not getting any help in front of them. Iowa's won 7 of their last 10 games, and their recent play isn't doing them any favors. Well, it was a fun ride while it lasted.
Ooh, that doesn't sound fun. For my hot this week, we're in the Pacific Division, and Cameron Hughes for Coachella Valley has really been a hot for me in a team that has been hot. 8 points in the last 5 games, and there's only been 5 games in the last 2 months that man hasn't scored a point. Otherwise, his March record has 9 points, and he has goals in his last 4 straight. Again, a big key part to that Coachella Valley team who's been really, really good. A team that hasn't been so good and who was good in the Pacific Division for a long time is the Ontario Reign, who have lost now 9 straight heading into this week. And you know what? That's the tweet. It's good to note they've lost 6 straight in December and January as well. They lost 5 straight in November. And you know, heavy hitters like Spence, Byfield, Wagner, and you could even argue Copley, who were on that team, aren't in the lineup right now. So it's kind of a mess for them as they kind of crash towards the bottom of the Pacific Division. And we talk about a cliff. I wouldn't want to make that any lower for anybody who's towards the bottom who might be thinking about doing good, which I'll talk about a little bit in the race for the Holy Grail. But I will turn it over to the Atlantic Division, who's going to get us kicked off with the race for the Holy Grail, and that's going to be Corey.
Yeah, absolutely. And so while if you're casually looking at it, you know, week to week here type of thing, you would probably say to yourself, okay, nothing's really changed that much. But that's far from the truth here in so many ways here. So you've seen, you know, it's still the kind of the same lineup. It's Hershey, or Providence, I should say, then in first, Hershey in second, Charlotte in third. But I would really tell you guys that I would really say that those are starting to become the 3 cars that are pulling away from the race, right? Like I would say with, you know, the Bears especially, you look at them kind of in that precarious spot in second place. They won 3 games in a row. Charlotte's also, you know, I think on a streak of, I believe, 3 games with a win and 1 overtime loss, if I'm remembering my standings board correctly. You know, basically all 3 of those teams have win streaks. And so they're all kind of keeping pace with each other. And for the Bears, you know, they could have been in danger of losing second place altogether if they don't string together 3 straight wins. So there's a lot kind of going on beyond the surface of what the casual observer might not see just by looking at the board. But one team to kind of emerge a little bit further is Springfield. You know, continuing, they were in last place in the division at one point this season, right? They've kind of continued this meteoric rise into 4th place. They're 5 points back of Charlotte for 3rd, which I think just speaks volumes to how improved their lineup is with guys like, you know, Hofer and now Jarenko, we talked about earlier. They're really carrying them. They've been kind of consistent presences. Obviously, with those losses, Lehigh Valley kind of took a hit this past week. They're still in 5th, most likely still going to make the playoffs. But then you kind of get to the bottom of the car crash here, 6th to 8th place. That last playoff spot kind of has me intrigued a little bit. It's kind of, this all is going to spill over into the game of the week segment here, so I won't give too much of my hand away here. But, you know, Wilkes-Barre won a game. They're not out of it all of a sudden. They're 4 points out of 6th place. You know, I don't know that any of them are really going to catch Lehigh Valley, despite only being 4 points behind in Bridgeport's case in 6th. But, you know, you got Bridgeport and Hartford. They're still kind of duking it out, Wilkes-Barre being a dark horse here. So it just leaves some intrigue for those bottom spot, I should say, singular, going into most of these teams have 11 games left in the season. So it's going to be a really interesting race for me to watch out for all the way to the end of the play, the regular season here, to see who makes it and who doesn't. Because I think for the first time, you're really going to see two disappointed teams on the outside that'll be wondering what they could have done better, for sure.
And in the North Division, it's actually kind of the opposite. Instead of teams kind of pulling away, if anything, the North Division is kind of bunching up together. So the only move in the standings is Belleville overtaking Laval for the last playoff spot in the North Division. Otherwise, all the official standings are staying the same. But what's really important to note now, and this is totally against what I said earlier in the season when I said that I was so happy that points percentage was going away, but actually now it's super important. And also even more important to know is that last place Cleveland's magic number to clinch a playoff spot is less than the two teams above them. Granted, it's a 2-point spread between those three teams, but according to the AHL, the Monsters also have, out of those three teams, so that'd be Cleveland, Laval, and Belleville, out of those three teams, Cleveland also has the easiest strength of schedule out of them. If you factor in the Rochester Americans, who would be one team up in the standings, then yes, the Amerks have the on-paper easiest schedule finishing out the season. But with only 3 points between those four teams and only 9 points between the 7th place Monsters and the second place Utica Comets. I mean, geez, I'm just going to take another hot take and saying that the North Division is going to be the one to watch in the last few weeks of the season. Now it's going to be a while, and I do mean a while, before we see anyone in the North clinch here, aside from the Toronto Marlies. But when teams do start to clinch here, it's going to come fast and in bunches. So yeah, just real quick rundown: Toronto, Utica, Syracuse, Rochester, Belleville has that last playoff spot for now. They have a 4.92 points percentage, tied with points percentage with the Laval Rocket, but with a 500, the 7th place Cleveland Monsters. So keep an eye out in the North.
And you want to talk about bunched up. In the Central, the top three teams have all the separation of 1 point from each other. Milwaukee sits up there in the number one spot with the tiebreaker and wins at 75 points, along there with the Texas Stars right at their hip. And the Manitoba Moose just 1 point behind them at 74. So, you know, things are going to get – I feel like there's going to be a lot of shuffling around as these three teams kind of battle and jostle for position, because it's really getting the winner of that 4-5 series or getting one of those juggernauts getting in the first-round matchup. So I think that number one spot is going to be huge going forward. And who's in that 4-5 spot? Well, you got the Iowa Wild and the Rockford Ice Hogs, who are also tied together at 67 points. So we're not going to talk about the last two teams. We've already spent more than enough time talking about them for the duration of this season. There's not going to be a lot of discussion about them going forward from here on out. So you know them, you love them, I write about them, and that's all that needs to be said about that.
Yikes. And we talked a little bit earlier in the season about the cliff that was in the Pacific Division. And that's really changed the definition of how you look at a cliff. And I'll tell you why. When you look at the top four spots in the Pacific Division, Calgary, Coachella Valley, Abbotsford, and Colorado all have points in at least their past three games. Calgary has points in 7 of their last 10 games. And the list goes down, where Coachella Valley has a 4-game win streak. Abbotsford has points in 4 of the last 5 games. And same with Abbotsford has points in a similar fashion. When you kind of look at the standings, though, it's Ontario that's really dropped in that 5th place spot right now. And that's where you're starting to see that where they're only 3 points ahead of Bakersfield, who has 62 points. And that 9-game losing streak that I talked about a little bit earlier in the podcast has really affected that. Making down towards the middle to the bottom, that 5, 6, 7 spot, you're looking at Bakersfield, Tucson, and San Jose. And making up the bottom are the usual suspects again, both who have even records throughout their past 10 games at 5-5, Henderson, and then there's San Diego, who's 19-41 throughout the season, and they're just about 51 points back from first place, but none of those are eliminated from playoff contention yet. As we keep things going along, we're going to now go to our game of the week here, and we'll get started again with Corey, who's got some good matchups coming out of the Atlantic Division.
Yes, we're kind of focusing on just Atlantic versus Atlantic, action here this weekend. But I got a pair of games that I think are going to be kind of the juggernaut early playoff preview kind of games here. And those are on Saturday and Sunday with the Providence Bruins and the Charlotte Checkers facing off for a pair of games at Bojangles Coliseum. And, you know, if you really want your playoff preview, this is a matchup to watch out. These are the teams to watch out for. I expect there to be not a lot of offense between these two teams. It's going to be a defensive stalemate between these two teams with the potential for scoring. Both these teams can score goals, but they can also really lock it down defensively when they need to. So I really like the tail of the tape here. If I'm second place Hershey, I really just want to take care of business in my games this weekend and, you know, really just hope that those games end in regulation, right? No 3-point games to prevent the needle from really moving on that is, you know, and one, whoever wins, whoever loses, it's going to both hurt and help them. So it's going to be a little bit of an interesting to watch how that impacts that race between third and first for Hershey's perspective there, too. And the other game that I have, I think, is going to be very interesting is a Sunday matchup between Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, and Hartford. Now, this has the potential to be putting one team out to pasture in Wilkes-Barre if they lose. You know, if I'm Wilkes-Barre, this is my season on the line here. Now, obviously, both these teams, I believe, play games ahead of this one going into the weekend. But if I'm Wilkes-Barre, this is kind of my season in a snapshot this weekend. You know, you're not going to get too many chances with these, you know, 4-point games, essentially, with swings to, you know, really insert yourself back into that playoff race. They're only 4 points out. This is still completely doable. But this is one of those games where you had to put your foot down and say, hey, we were meant to be a playoff team. You know, we've got derailed this season by injuries. You know, the whole 9 yards that Wilkes-Barre's had to deal with this season. I think they can really make a push for that 6th spot. And this is going to be one of those games that they have to win in order to make that happen, though. The one X factor I'd love to say to watch out for is hopefully if he plays this weekend. I didn't see him playing despite, you know, what we saw last week. But if Sam Poulin gets back into that lineup for Wilkes-Barre, I would expect him to, you know, really show up and show up, you know, demonstrate why, hey, our season's not lost. I'm here now. We're going to make some noise.
And in the North Division, by the time Monday, March 27th comes, we are going to have some exhausted players in the North because we have 4 teams playing 3-3 from Friday to Sunday. One of those teams, the Rochester Americans, oh, guess what? They're also playing on Tuesday the 21st. So they get 4 games in less than a week. Just going to be super tired teams. But of course, I'm going to be watching the Cleveland Monsters in their 3-on-3 against Toronto. They have a home and home. And then they're going to wrap up their weekend in Rochester. But what I'm really going to be keeping an eye on is Syracuse's home match against the Utica Comets on Sunday. It's going to be the backstop of a 3-3 for both of those teams. And of course, they're going to be jostling to be that second team to clinch in the division. So it's going to be a really potential playoff atmosphere as they also start the weekend against each other. So nice little kind of broken up series there. They're going to have some tired legs, maybe some short fuses. I don't know, but either way, I don't think you can really go wrong with any of these matchups in the North this weekend.
And I think I'm keeping my eye on Friday night's game. We got the Milwaukee Admirals going into Laval to take on the Rocket. A bit of a unusual part of their schedule going in and facing an opponent in the North. So it's going to be a real interesting divisional matchup with both teams kind of playing for more than just bragging rights and saying, oh, you know, we did better outside division. You know, the Admirals, they need all the points that they can get if they want to avoid a first round slugfest against either Texas or Manitoba. And on the other side, Laval, they're going to be scratching and clawing away in the North for their playoff lives. So it's, you know, Dina and I have seen that atmosphere at Place Bell and know that it's unlike anything that Milwaukee is going to be skating into. So I'm real excited to kind of see a different dynamic that we haven't really seen out of either of these two teams.
I'm going to go with something a little off the wall. And I'm going to tell you guys not to even watch the Pacific Division. Don't turn on the TV. There's nothing to watch. There's nothing good. At Henderson and Coachella Valley, you just want to watch an absolute beating to the pulp? Are you into Calgary and San Diego? You just want to watch a beating to the pulp? I thought that Ontario and Abbotsford might be a match, but Ontario doesn't know how to win games anymore, and Abbotsford now knows how to. So if you want to watch, maybe it's comeback season. I don't know. Bakersfield and San Jose, who's kidding who here? Right? Don't even watch another division. That's my game of the week.
I want to go back to what Andrew was saying because, Zach, wow. Yeah, have the Pacific people watch the North. You got lots of good hockey there. Maybe. Is there truly any team that has a true home or such a unique home ice advantage that Laval has? Because even whenever you watch a team play them in Place Bell, it's every night. It seems like it is incredibly loud there, super passionate fans. And I don't see an atmosphere quite like that anywhere else in the American Hockey League on a night to night basis.
They certainly take pride in what they do, especially when it comes to chirping a goalie during an all-star game. Like that was, that was when I could tell that these fans are something special.
I want to go back to that. That was just the constant chirping and chanting of Joel Hofer. That was an amazing experience.
Well, speaking of other games you could be watching that aren't from the Pacific Division, Dina kind of alluded to this one earlier here as her, you know, one of her picks, but Free Hockey, AHL TV Free Game of the Week, features a North Division clash as the Utica Comets visit the Syracuse Crunch on Sunday, March 26th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. Or Central, I'm sorry. 4 p.m. Central Time, that would probably be something like 1 or 2 o'clock Central Time, I believe. But, you know, like Dina kind of mentioned, she said that, you know, the two teams are very much looking to leapfrog each other to clinch playoff spots here very soon. It's sure to be a hotly contested, you know, short-fused, hopefully entertaining tilt, and you can watch that for free on AHL TV.
And speaking of other games that aren't on the Pacific Division docket, we also have live action on the Field Pass Hockey app. Oh, that's a double cash register right there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There we go. There we go. I make sure double money because you know what? It's playoff and all the points matter here. And Corey set the stage in this one very well. The Checkers are rebounding after smacking the Marlies last weekend as critical playoff points are on the line for them as they take on Providence. Puck drop is at 4 Eastern on Saturday, and then we'll do it all again on Sunday at 1 Eastern time. And you can download the Field Pass Hockey app where you can listen to that live on the Google Play Store or the Apple app store.
Now, this is what happens when I give Zach the controls.
You know what? I should have been playing this all night long, right? Like, all cash money. I get paid by every time this goes, so I'm good.
But can I just say here real quick how spot on our picks were that they were also like the free game or something that we're going to be airing on the app. And we're talking in our little like private chat on StreamYard. We're just like, we didn't even look. We didn't even think. But it's like, we're spot on. We're repping the brands. We're all good.
Love to see it. And we would love to have you there. Speaking of things that we absolutely love, it's the bonus round. And Corey sets the stage for this week's bonus round.
So I found a great primary source for this that's probably going to be like the source of all of my bonus rounds for many, many months to come, which is this great book by the great Tim Leone, Hershey Bears Sweet Seasons. I've been going through tons of tidbits about the Bears that are going to be very obscure to you guys and mean absolutely nothing, but mean absolutely everything to me. So one such tidbit of trivia I had for you guys is that on October 5th, 1974, the Hershey Bears played an exhibition game against an NHL team. Now, this was back in the old days where Hershey was actually considered, you know, they were so respected, and Hershey Park Arena at the time was so well respected that the Bears are actually considered a couple of times for an NHL franchise. And of course, they deemed the market was too small, you know, compared to some of the ones they have now, that was probably for the best. But the Bears played an NHL team in an exhibition game. What NHL team did they play?
I'll make a guess to start. Considering the Flyers were playing everybody, including the Russians around that time, I'll go with Philly.
Wasn't Philly, believe it or not.
I'll say Pittsburgh.
Wasn't Pittsburgh.
Washington? Or was Washington even a team then?
Oh, that's actually a good question. That would have been right around the time they came into the league, I think, although I don't know that fact for sure. Sorry to everybody that's on the Washington side that may be listening. I'll give you guys a hint. It's a team that has since changed names. Same city, different name at the time.
Oh. Winnipeg?
Not Winnipeg, but you're in the right ballpark.
Colorado.
Not Colorado.
Rockies.
Minnesota?
Boom, that's it. Minnesota, yes! North Stars was the team that the Bears played on that day. And speaking of the Russians, too, my other trivia fact that I was going to give you guys, I told Dina this one earlier, which is why I'm not using it. The Bears actually played a division of the Soviet team around that same time. They played the Soviet Wings, and Hershey beat them by a 10-7 final score on January 5th, 1975. So it was around the same time back in those days as when the Flyers were playing them. Almost today, they had, like, you know, basically an NHL and an AHL type team. And one of them came to Hershey and played around the same time they played in Philadelphia. People say, this book says that what people that remember that game remember were the Russians' funny hats.
Oh, no. Well, yay. I don't know how I got that one, I guess, thanks to the Mighty Ducks. Because I was just thinking teams that are around but change names. And I, for some reason, when it wasn't Winnipeg, my mind instantly went to the Minnesota North Stars, now the Minnesota Wild. So thank you for that random piece of trivia.
You're lucky, because my brain immediately went to some of those obscure teams like Kansas City and Oakland and all of those. So you're lucky that your brain doesn't immediately go there.
I'm surprised that none of you guys guessed the Boston Bruins. Because the Bruins and the Bears randomly had some history together. In this book, it also says that the Boston Bruins held their training camp in Hershey in 1937. So I suppose that would have been an alternate answer, a good alternate answer for that as well.
Wow, that's an interesting tidbit. And I'm sure there's going to be lots more tidbits as we go throughout the season when Corey inevitably wins the bonus round like he normally does. Well, folks, this has been a very fun episode, but it's time for us to say goodbye. If you'd like to hear more of us, you can please subscribe to our YouTube channel, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or you can also follow us on Twitter at The Holy Grail, THEHOLYGRAHL. You can also check out some of the other Field Pass Hockey podcasts, including Matthew Harding and Jason Mal's breakdown of the ECHL's Wichita Thunder, which happens every second week. They talk to some legendary hockey players in the Rolling Thunder podcast, or one of my personal favorites, the Syracuse Speaks podcast with Alexander Ackerman speaking about everything you need to know about the Syracuse Crunch, who are on the quest to the Calder Cup. On behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back here in 7 short days.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.